TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
We are the G.O.D.
We
came to rock the spot like Iron Man stars.
Hey to the innocencies
in the world today.
Chair Shot Radio, Chris Platt and the R.E.Y. Cash.
So listen to them clear and put the box right near your ears. Let your blood sink down your fears. Cause you can never fuck with Wu-Tang Killer.
Look at the chair. Look at the shape of the chair.
You are now listening to Chair Shot Radio. Always use your head.
Greetings and salutations, ladies and gentlemen. It's your boy, Rancid K. Ray Cash. I am back with another episode of the Chair Shot Radio. Doing my dailies this week, I kind of gave y'all a heads up on that, so this is officially the first, and it makes sense that the first guest, or my first co-host, would be a legendary figure himself. The man, the myth, the legend, representing the Visionaries Wrestling Network, and the Brainbuster Radio Collective, they're the new Wu-Tang. Shout out to my boy, a.k.a. Mags, Darren Kirkby. What's up, brother?
I'm very well. Yourself?
I'm hot as hell, but I'm good.
Yeah, amazing words. Absolutely not an ounce of truth in them. I am literally just an English idiot who was, people just bring onto the podcast to have a giggle at.
I'm telling you, no. The man, the myth, the legend. I'm telling you.
Well, I appreciate the sentiments. Thank you very, very much.
So, this weekend has been a hell of a week for wrestling. We have...
Whew, has it?
SummerSlam. We have essentially the G1 finals, because they'll be finished. As you guys listened to it, they would have finished this morning.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to talk about with you today was something that I don't think gets enough conversation. I want to break down TakeOver and talk about NXT. What do you think?
Yeah, I am up for that. I watched the show last night, so yeah, let's do it.
So, this is the 26th, right? Because the last one was TakeOver 25.
Yep.
We're old, bro. 26 TakeOvers?
How quick has that? It seems to have gone so quick. And these are like quarterly pay-per-views as well. There's four or five of them a year. So
maybe five if they have one on their own. Because normally they accompany the big four.
Mm-hmm.
So TakeOvers, even before we get to talking about this year's TakeOver, TakeOvers have gotten real interesting recently, because I think everybody can agree and can attest that TakeOvers might be the best pure 3 hours of wrestling you'll watch, maybe all quarter.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fair assessment. It's on point. It's almost like a perfect mixture of a New Japan indie-esque physical style with the best stylings of WWE cinematography and entertainment. The NXT kind of has that merged perfectly.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But recently, like, they've been like crazy with how good the shows have been. But there has been, I think, a small looming issue that I think hit home last night. So you want me to tell you about that now or after we break down the card?
No, let's do an overview and then we can look into the card more in depth after.
So I think that, well, so first I'll actually say the actual matches. Street Profits, NXT Tag Champs versus Unspeeded Era, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish. Candice LeRae, who finally, thank God, got a match on a TakeOver versus
Mauro gets on my nerves a lot, but the Joshi Judas is excellent. The Joshi Judas, Io Shirai. You got the triple threat North American Championship match between Dream, Velvet Dream, Pete Dunne, and Roddy Strong for the Undisputed Era. You got Mia Yim trying to take the Women's Championship from Shayna Baszler. And essentially the three stages of hell match between Johnny Gargano and the NXT champ Adam Cole. Bebe. I think that this ever growing string of epics at the end of these cards are hurting the rest of the card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point. But if that's not the point of your main event, what is the point of your main event?
Well, the point of your main event should be to sell the house, to structure everything, to help structure the card, be the anchor for the card to structure around, and to send the fans home happy at the end of the night. Even if the heel wins, the match was great. But that's the point. But what I mean is that they've almost just kind of put everything to the side to book, going back to the Ciampa-Gargano feuds. Ciampa-Gargano is the only feud in history in NXT history that has main evented a takeover. And I'm not counting, War Games doesn't count because that's a specific specialized match. But other than War Games, Johnny and Gargano, well, no, tag team titled it, I guess. What I'm saying is there's not a lot of feuds that weren't for titles or weren't a specialty match that ended takeovers over the world title match. But consistently, Johnny and Ciampa did. But I just feel like as great as Johnny Gargano is, and Tommaso Ciampa's the man, and Adam Cole is great, bro, I feel like it's not detracting, but I feel like it's almost a black hole away from the rest of the card. Because other than Street Profits was the first two matches were great. The other two matches were good, but it was almost like we're sitting our hands waiting for this hour-long, you know, Greek Homer-esque epic.
Yeah, I understand that point. I think there's something deeper underlying in this, and a point I was gonna mention before you start recording was, I kind of think you can judge this event in three separate ways and come up with three separate conclusions. You can judge this as a standalone event on its own merits, and you can say that this was an absolutely quality card. You can judge this as a part of the takeover hemisphere or whatever, and say it probably didn't match up to previous takeovers, and this may be where they've kind of plateaued. But then you can also look at it as, in the future, it's quite clear that NXT is going to Fox Sports 1. And it almost seemed to me that this takeover was kind of like just a holding pattern.
Yeah.
To keep the storylines, all that ticking over, but to make that big move in October. And I just have the feeling that this feud isn't over, and we're going to see Gargano versus Cole 3 for the debut of NXT on FS1.
Yeah, please no. They're great. Their matches have always been amazing, but yeah, like, you can only go to the well so many times.
Yeah.
And please, I don't want anybody listening to misunderstand. The show was great. It's just, it wasn't the level of mind-blowing we've come to expect. So there was a bit of a disconnect from, a show can be great and not be as great as you expected it to be. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it was a bad show. So it wasn't a bad show by any stretch. But I guess let's get to the card a little bit. Maybe we can expound a little more. Also want to mention that you said in a holding pattern, they are in a bit of a holding pattern, because I don't think we've gone this long without a rash of major call-ups.
Yeah.
You know? And so, if you think of the people who won on the card last night, and I'm not counting Matt Riddle and Killian Dane weren't on the card, but they did something on the show. But Kushida, Keith Lee, Damian Priest, Dijakovic, like, there's the Forgotten Sons and Breezango were on the undercard. They're gonna, on the pre-show, essentially. the eight people in the breakout challenge who all were stars in their own before they even got here. Like, there's a lot of people sitting on their hands with Bianca Belair, who might be one of the biggest stars in the company. There's a lot of people sitting, chilling, like, okay, well, where's my turn?
Yeah, it's kind of getting almost like the main roster in that effect, where there's this, like, orgy of talent and not enough, like, airtime to have them on. But my concern would be, going to FS1, they're gonna be, it's obviously going to be a two-hour show, I would presume. But is it going to be like the WWE main roster style, where it's the same characters and stories every single week, and we're still going to have these great talents sat there doing nothing because it's 2 hours of Gargano versus Cole, or 2 hours of Undisputed Era?
Well, this is the one thing I don't think Triple H has been able to figure out effectively yet. Because when people ask what NXT is, NXT is multiple things. But the way I look at it as, look, the way I look at it is, if you look at NXT in general, it splits into multiple branches, if you will. You have NXT, the developmental brand, which is the PC, the new people who are getting trained, the people who come in from the other industries or other promotions and learn the WWE way. And then you have NXT, the touring brand, which is Largo Loop and all this stuff. And then you have NXT, the third wrestling brand. Mm-hmm. So it's three brands, essentially, from the way I look at it, from my point of view.
Yeah.
So the hard part is making all of that fit. Because I'm going to throw a name out here. A girl like Deonna Purrazzo. Deonna Purrazzo... She jobbed for them and did some stuff. You remember, very famous, she got her head kicked off by Asuka.
Mm-hmm.
And then they didn't sign her. They told her, go do your thing. We'll look at you a little bit later. She went and became one of the biggest women in the indies, and she got signed back. She's been on TV, not counting the Mae Young Classic. She's been on NXT TV once.
I think she's been on NXT UK a couple of times, but yeah, I totally get your point. It's becoming like main roster WWE, where it's bloated because they're not using these talents.
But they have more of a... Exactly right, but they have more of a responsibility to their talents, because most of their talents are learning.
Yeah.
You know, most of their... And I don't just mean the new guys. The people who come from other companies. Finn Balor has been open about saying, I wouldn't have been able to make it here. And I went to NXT because I didn't even know where to look at the camera. You know, little stuff like that we take for granted. Okay, let's get to the card. So the first match of the night was the Undisputed Era trying to be draped in gold, which is a real possibility against the Street Profits. And bro, talk about a team that's like leveled up.
Yep.
They have went from like, yeah, we cool, we make some noise, we cool to get the crowd involved, into like a real mainstay.
Yeah, and it goes to show that they've been on main roster so much since winning the titles.
And we always knew they had the personality, but their in ring has like went crazy.
Yeah,
that match last night was, I'm not gonna call it a classic, but it was befitting of the run of tag matches the Undisputed Era has at the beginning of TakeOvers. Because every time they have one, you know I'm in for one. I'm in for like a classic or a great match.
Yeah. I spent quite a bit of time in the Smart to Death Discord during this show. And this match got quite a bit of negativity. And I couldn't personally see it. I think it started off a little bit slow, which is not usually what you get from an Undisputed Era match. But I think going towards the back end of this match, it was absolutely spot on. All four men really did well and really played the part. And that blockbuster off the top row, wow, that was quality.
So if we want to nitpick, Montez didn't sell the leg. After he got out of the Achilles lock or the heel hook or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That was an annoyance. Okay, cool. And Dawkins wasn't as quick to some spots as he should have been. Other than that, like, it was excellent. Top to bottom, great tag team wrestling, great tag moves. Everything was, I don't know what people wanted to see in that match. That was excellent.
Yeah, I think, I mean, not to disparage anyone, but I think because of all the rumors of NXT maybe going to FS1 and becoming almost a main roster show, it's kind of like straight away people looking at it negatively because it's not the indie baby promotion on the network anymore. Maybe it's a little bit of that, but I don't know. I thoroughly enjoyed the match. I thought, whilst it wasn't the best ever Undisputed Era match I've ever seen, it was a very solid opening to the takeover.
That also matches with the rumor that came out last night that Vince wants to put his hands on NXT a little more. So mm-hmm. that makes a lot of sense. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. I'm quite concerned that if NXT does go to FS1, that it's going to become a little bit like the main roster. Now, not to badmouth the main roster, but that's for a set audience. And if Vince gets his hands on NXT and tries to mold that into this almost like a Raw or SmackDown light, they're going to lose that core audience and they are going to go to AEW.
Well, that's the problem. Is that if they're on regular television, it's not for niche audience no more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're on broadcast TV. If they're on cable television, you can find them on you can find NXT on your remote control guide. That's not for niche audience no more, bro.
Yeah, but I think the whole thing about NXT is it appeals to this fan base that likes indie style wrestling, and if it becomes like this overproduced, like almost main roster style, they're going to lose those indie style fans, and the one place they're going to go is to the direct competition. I would be happy for NXT to go 2 hours as long as it stays as NXT rather than like a new iteration of it.
I agree. So I think October and the rest of the year is really telling. Because I really feel that as great as NXT is, as great as their takeovers do, nobody watches the TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's something to be said for that style that everybody seems to love and want, not getting ratings.
Yeah.
So AEW's gonna get rating good. They're gonna get decent to good ratings their first couple shows, month, 2 months, whatever. However long it takes for the honeymoon period to be over.
Yeah.
Once it becomes a regular basis and their ratings kind of plateau and even out, now I'm not saying that they're going to drop. I'm just saying whatever they even out to, that's going to be a good indicator of, well, do these fans really stand up by what they say? Because historically, they haven't.
And also, I've said it before, but it does bear repeating. You've got to realize that our vocal community of Twitter is not that big, to be fair. And yeah, we all make this big loud noise about how we love this kind of wrestling, but we're a small percentage of that audience, and 90% of the people who watch WWE don't even go on Twitter. So it's one of them. It's a little group making a big noise, basically.
Yeah. Well, so speaking of big noise, I think there's been a big noise made for, God, now 3 years, 2 years, for Candice LeRae to stop being Mrs. Gargano and being Candice LeRae.
Mm-hmm.
And last night she was allowed to be Candice LeRae. She even tweeted about it. It's good to be Candice LeRae again.
Yeah.
Candice and Io was probably the match I was most looking forward to, only because of how good the heel turn Io has. The Io heel turn has been excellent, and I wanted to see Candice get this spot to see how she did. And I don't think Candice was as good as she has been or could be, but the match was excellent because Io led her through like a champ.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think Io, if she's not the MVP of this show, she's definitely up there with Roddy for me. But if you to take just on match basis, this was my match of the night. I think both ladies did absolutely amazing. Really helped build Io's like evil character, and Candice looked like an absolute boss even in defeat.
You know, very rarely do you get the perfect finish, but Io, with Candice being basically a Gargano and kicking out of everything in sight, and Io saying, "Screw it, I'm just gonna choke her out," mm-hmm. and Candice just being choked out was the perfect finish because Candice keeps her babyface heat because she didn't give up. Io looks even more dangerous because now she got another move that's going to hurt. It was perfect.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed the very subtle nuance of her taking like essences from Shayna Baszler. Like, yeah, if I want to be the kind of person who's the top dog in here, I've got to take lessons from the champion. And she's done that by choking out opponents. And we all know that Shayna Baszler is an expert at choking out of opponents. So I really enjoyed that little facet of the match.
I didn't think about that. You just put me onto something. That's really good.
Sometimes I come out with these little gems.
That's really good. I didn't think about that, but Io's basically doing Japanese Shayna Baszler cosplay. You're absolutely right. Wow. And by the way, I still apologize to the people who have epilepsy for her entrance because, my God, the flashing lights, bro. I love it, but man, it's like you're at a Skrillex concert. For those of you who know Skrillex. So I was a little, not disappointed, but I think I'm a little underwhelmed with the next match. The North American, well, do you want to talk about the brawl first, or you want to talk about the...
Yeah, I mean, we can bring up the brawl, obviously, it's to add to a storyline. For me, I think this brawl went on entirely too long. It needed to be a very quick thing, and you could see where it was a scripted brawl because the security was in exactly the right place, and there were even the point where they went through the off the stage and through the tables. You could tell that guard placed himself in that position, and then he was like clotheslined almost by Dane to take him out, and it looked a little bit silly.
So, I think the placement was silly, but that brawl was everything I expected it to be because Matt Riddle's a fighter. Killian Dane's a big dude who can fight, and he keeps jumping him. So every time, whenever they got in front of each other, it was going to be on. And this was, you remember those brawls that like Taker and Lesnar used to have? Or Cena and Lesnar, or Roman and Hunter, like the big pull-apart brawls that lasted like 2 segments.
Yeah.
The reason those segments are so long and so contrived like that is to make both guys look really, really strong.
Yeah.
Killian Dane needs to look strong right now because there's a big bunch of people who have not seen him in a long time. He's going after a guy who has lost maybe two matches. Matt Riddle has
looked excellent. I think it's one. Yeah.
Dream beat him, and that's the only guy I think that's beat him in 1-on-1.
Yep. I'm concerned then that why would this be your first feud for Dane if you want him to look like a monster? Because it's going to be obvious that Riddle comes out of this on top. He's one of the hottest properties in all of WWE right now with the ways that he's been on social media and calling out the likes of Goldberg and Jericho and stuff like that. I don't want Killian Dane to be fed to him almost.
I don't know that it's as as obvious as you think it is. Matt Riddle will very clearly win the feud, but I think Dane wins the first match, and it's almost Bray Wyatt-esque in that if Dane gets his point across, and Dane reminds everybody how much of a beast he is, and by the way, the look is much better than like the trunks with just the hair. Like this look makes him look really intimidating.
Yeah.
If he can keep beating that dude up, Killian's gonna be there for about another year, probably, right? To reestablish himself, maybe then get called up somewhere else. Just look like a beast. Just look like a beast.
Yeah.
You know, as long as he doesn't get squashed.
Yeah, that'd be my concern if Matt Riddle is made to look almost superheroic.
To Cassius Ohno.
Yeah. But if they give Killian Dane a good showing, then we've potentially got two big, big stars for the future there. So you can't really complain at that, although I do think that the brawl was a little bit contrived.
Sure. I think it was too, and it went on a little long. And I think what it was it was unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was concerned going into the show before they announced Candice and Io that Candice and Io were going to be on the pre-show spot for next week. And Dane and Riddle were going to get that spot. So, very clearly, they had to get him on the show, on the card.
Yeah.
But, you know. It did its job. And Killian Dane, again, looks like a beast because who walked away and who didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But, the Triple Threat North American Championship match. So, you got Velveteen Dream, who might be the most charismatic dude in the damn business right now. My God. Roddy Strong and Pete Dunne. And I was, I hate to say this, a little underwhelmed. I think the match was really, really good. But then see, this is the problem, NXT, bro. You set yourself up with these expectations, which is on our fault. It's our fault. It's on us. We make expectations ourselves. But I expected for this match to, like, steal the month. Not the weekend, dog. The month.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a really good triple threat.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but for me, I think it almost kind of exposed Velveteen Dream's like inexperience. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a product of the WWE system. He's learning the WWE way, whereas you've got the likes of Pete Dunne and Roddy Strong, who made their names on the indies, who have made their names being in wrestling matches rather than in TV wrestling matches. And they were as smooth as butter, absolutely smooth as butter. And it just felt to me that Dream was just that one step behind and just almost trying to play catch up all the way through the match. But great victory. I really did enjoy the attempt at the double rolling, whatever it was, it called the move he does.
The Dream Valley Driver.
Dream Valley Driver, yeah. I think they had some very unique spots in the match. And like I said, Roddy Strong, he for me was the MVP of this night. That guy has low key been MVP of NXT all this year, putting on just quality match after match after match. Yeah, it was a good match. It was just for me, exposed Dream a little bit for his inexperience.
Is Roddy the best wrestler at NXT right now?
It could very much well be. I mean, we could all say that Johnny Gargano is probably the best pure wrestler, but if you
bro.
Well, there was in this Smart to Death Discord, there's a guy called JD. He does like statistics, and okay. Johnny Gargano has only fought 14 times this year. He doesn't do the house show like run. So where Roddy Strong has been doing quality matches week in, week out, house show, TV, takeover. And yeah, I think he is the best wrestler in NXT right now.
Yeah. You know, we're going to get to Gargano. I think in many ways Gargano's underrated, but in many ways he's overrated, which is a really weird place to be.
Mm-hmm.
But when I just think about, oh, this guy has talent. Like, man... Other than maybe Kushida right now, and that brand, Roddy Strong is amazing.
Yeah.
So, if you don't know, you might know, you might not, but Mia Yim is my husband, right? I'm Mrs. Yim. And so Mia Yim versus Shayna Baszler was a match I looked forward to. I appreciated that it was a different build. I appreciated that, you know, in real life, they live together. Before I get into it, what did you think of the match?
I think this was the low point of the card. They just didn't seem to vibe properly for me. It just turned into being the typical Shayna Baszler match. I enjoyed the... almost like the swapping of roles where Shayna had her arm injured and then close to the end of Mia stamped on her arm. But yeah, for me, this was lackluster. I think both of these girls can do much, much better. And I think Shayna's time in NXT has got to be done. She's just decimating that women's division, and it's to the detriment of NXT. I think it's time that she moved up, but then she's stuck because she's carrying Duke and Shafia, who were clearly not ready at all for main roster. So she's in kind of this no-win situation where she's got to be in NXT to support them, but she's clearly ready for main roster. She's been ready for main roster for a long, long time.
Treat them like birds, bro. Push them out the nest and let them fly. If they can't fly, then that's on them.
Yeah, but I think the whilst they're not good as wrestlers, the name value that they've got as part of the MMA Four Horsewomen, and the rumors that Ronda may be back pretty soon. There's the Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen always in the background. So I think they're floating and basically skating on thin ice by not being good, but being there on name value. And I don't think that's fair to Shayna, to be fair.
It's not. And you talk about Four Horsewomen versus Four Horsewomen. Sasha got to come back to work first before we can stick around.
Yeah, there is that.
So I think the story told in the match, which was, I think, clever and well told, hurt the match. What I mean is, the whole story going into it was Mia Yim is grew up on the streets. She's not come from the same cloth. She built herself up from nothing and this, that, and the other. Shayna's classically trained. She's this, she's that. So Mia was going to come at it from a different perspective. If you look at it, every time Shayna had her in the hole, she poked her eye. She pulled her hair. She stomped on her feet. Mia was cheating to keep up. And Shayna looked like a babyface. Mm-hmm. And that hurt the match, especially when the crowd wasn't even really that strong behind Mia to begin with, because the build came out of almost nowhere.
Yeah.
And what I think what's most disappointing to me is when you have a takeover match with the history of that brand and that show, and not just that show, but I realize that we're in Toronto this year, but the takeover for SummerSlam is historically their WrestleMania. Right? Takeover Brooklyn has been their biggest show.
Yeah.
You got to step up. Mia didn't step up. Like, you didn't see a noticeable rise to the occasion like you did with every other wrestler on the card that night. And that's disappointing.
Yeah. And I think this is a clear case for me of where the booking at the finish kind of took away from the match. Now, I'm not saying that the book, it would have changed the wrestling in the match, but I think if Mia would have won this, it would have kind of lifted it rather than it being the typical Shayna wins, and then you're almost critiquing what went on in the match a little bit more because Shayna's come away with a victory. I think if Mia would have won and we'd have got a fresher story and Shayna being the one chasing, maybe it would have been we would have looked at this match a little bit more positive.
It's a good point. I mean, you know, a lot of matches can be bad if the finish is good, then we'll remember it as good. And the finish was really, really good, but for the bad person. So,
yeah.
I love the fact that she keeps finding ways to choke people out when she's hurt. I think that's the coolest thing to me. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Who did she choke out with one arm? Was it Ember?
Yeah, I think it was. Can you just imagine her on main roster? If you had her against Becky Lynch, if you had her against Bayley, you would get some. You get interest back into the women's division on main roster, and it's just a shame that she's like the big fish in a very small pond in NXT, where she could be the big fish in a bigger pond on main roster.
Well, that's so. If I could give you some fantasy booking, and so this is gonna come out after SummerSlam, but we're recording this on Sunday morning, so we don't know what happens tonight. So just inside baseball, guys. But I would run Shayna and Ronda both debuting either, if not tonight, whatever, sometime in the next month. Have Ronda go after Becky, have Shayna go after Bayley, and then the beauty of that is you can run tag matches, Bayley and Becky versus Ronda and Shayna. And then when you get to what is the Survivor Series, you don't even have to run Marina and Jessamyn because they ain't ready. They could just be ringside.
Yeah.
You can run Natty and another person, somebody else to step in. And then that could be where Sasha, if she doesn't come back that night, Sasha could make her heel turn and build to her and Bayley for WrestleMania. But you have so much build just because you have the luxury of having Ronda and Shayna there to be your anchor heels again.
Yep. Yep, I like that.
And it's fresh. Because, think about this. If Bayley beats Ember tonight. When Bayley beats Ember tonight. Sorry, guys. who next?
Yeah.
You want to see Bayley versus Charlotte again?
That's probably what we're getting.
That's why I'm... I would like to see... Of course, you know, knock on wood, this is all me hypothetically speaking. I'd like to see Bayley and Shayna, versus champ, mm-hmm. and let Ember earn her stripes and build and have a long feud against Charlotte. Let Ember show the crowd that, yeah, you have a great finishing move and you're talented, but you can actually beat the best before you go beat the best.
Yeah, and my worry is that with the move to Fox, that they're going to want the title on Charlotte because she's the biggest star in the women's division for WWE behind Becky.
You say that, but a lot of us fans thought that I was thinking about Roman. Roman ain't even thought about the title.
Yeah, he's officially not even on the card on SummerSlam.
Kofi's been pushed as the strongest pushed babyface champ we've had maybe since John Cena. So, like, I feel like a lot of these fears are coming from, it's almost like PTSD. Not to make fun of people who have PTSD, but like, you know, this happened in 2016, or this happened in 2012, so I'm scared it's going to happen now. There's no indication. It still could, but there's no indication. Speaking of indications,
it's segue.
I'm set. Look, yeah, I went to journalism for that. There are some indications that a young man might have wrestled his last match in NXT.
Would that young man be Johnny Gargano by any chance? After the William Regal came out and gave him his applause.
John Gargano / Takeover / Wrestling / Badass mm-hmm. / LeRae, yes.
Johnny LeRae.
I will tell everybody who will listen to me that Johnny's the second best wrestler in his marriage.
Yeah, I remember Candice in the World's Cutest Tag Team. Wow, she is amazing. And we've not seen a tenth of what she can do in NXT yet. Not even a tenth.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, so everything built up to this, Three Stages of Hell, and William Regal, the old villain that he is, sadistically picked the most sadistic final fall that someone could have thought of. It was essentially an asylum match / lethal lockdown with no roof / this is old school for your TNA fans, Raven's Clockwork Orange House of Fun match.
Yeah.
But so first fall strategically was a regular match.
Mm-hmm.
Second fall was Johnny Gargano's pick, a street fight.
Yeah. So,
Darren, break it down for me. Tell me what you thought about the match. Tell me what you thought about the falls. Let's spitball and let's see what. Tell me what you thought.
Well, my initial thoughts were when I saw the cage way before the match, I thought this is telegraphed that we're getting three falls here.
Did anybody in the world not think we weren't going to get three?
No, I know, but you did.
Well, they gave it away. You're right.
You don't like the fact that you know that it's going to go one on one. But breaking the match down, I think, again, I was in the Smart to Death Discord, and this is another match that kind of got a little bit of negative criticism. And I thought the first fall was a little bit slow. I enjoyed how the fall happened with the disqualification. But it was just clear, brilliant wrestling that we've expected from Johnny Gargano and Adam Cole. These two guys worked together just as smooth as butter, and it was a great first match. If that would have been a match on its own, I would have been more than happy with it. And then, obviously, we're going to the street fight. The least street fight that I've seen in a long, long time. It was literally just a no fall, falls count anywhere fight.
Yeah.
Again, we knew what were coming because of the cage. That another decent part of the match. But that the cage match, yeah, I thought they were really, really innovative in that match. The barbed wire wrapped around the top of the cage, you knew what were going to come. You knew that it was going to end up being used. I really enjoyed the using the steel door as a platform over the corner. I thought that was clever. I think WWE need to start investing in barbed wire, because I've never seen barbed wire with so little barbs on it. I think Johnny cut off about a 4-foot piece. It had two barbs.
That's so true. Hey man, PG, they're not a blood and guts corporation, bro.
Yeah, and he cut it off and he didn't even get to use it. He didn't even use the barbed wire anywhere.
Did you notice that he cut it off and it looked like a G? Did you notice that?
Yeah. But yeah, the finish to me felt it may have been botched a little bit. They obviously overshot the tables a little bit, yeah. And Cole took the brunt of that on his shoulder.
Yeah.
And it felt to me like they were meant to land and Cole was to land on top of Gargano. They were both knocked out, but Cole picked up the win. But they actually landed about a person's distance away from each other. So Cole had to look like he rolled over, which kind of took it away from me, because he took the brunt of the pain. So how can he recover enough to roll over? And Gargano was there absolutely knocked out cold. But I thought it was a really good match. It was a solid B match for me. They've both done better matches, but I really, really enjoyed it.
So, as with any 2 out of 3 falls match, any good 2 out of 3 falls match is a tale of three matches.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if the entire match was just a cage, we're sitting and talking about an all-time great match.
Yeah.
Which doesn't take away from the other two falls, because, like you said, the first fall was wrestling excellence. Second fall was a fun car crash for like 5 minutes. It wasn't long.
Yeah.
But the innovation they used, let's say innovation, like you could tell they were calling stuff on the fly. Like, for example, Johnny couldn't get the sledgehammer out because it was zip tied too tight. So yeah. Cole had to stall for time and try to hit him, and Johnny just hit him with the a sunset flip powerbomb off to the top rope, and yeah. Then climbed back up and got that was just off the top.
Yeah.
The two Panama Sunrises from Cole and the Panama Sunrise, Avalanche Panama Sunrise from the top rope from onto Cole. Like, it was just really innovative.
Yeah.
It wasn't too ridiculous with the weapons, even though they were like every weapon you could think of. Johnny's very sadistic, so I'm glad when he saw the bolt cutters, he just cut the barbed wire and didn't want to do it. Yeah, but I think the biggest takeaway from this is, bro, we're talking. So, is it too early to call him Johnny 205?
I think he goes to main roster. I think he's got too much name value for 205. I've said time and time again, I love 205. I think it's the best pure wrestling WWE do. And if that brand had 4 big names on it, it would be a whole different show. And Johnny Gargano would be my first draft pick to go there. But I just think he's got too much name value to go to 205.
And I think we overrate his name value because of the NXT brand. And he's been there for 17 years. So, you know...
Him, yeah.
He's been there as long as my kid's been alive, damn near. And I'm joking, because my kid's old, but Gargano's been there forever.
Yeah.
So when you came in to do the jobber matches, then you did the Cruiserweight Classic, then you were a tag team, then you got beat down by every tag team, then you got some momentum, then you won the tag titles, then you fought in a major match, then you had major regular feuds. Then you had main event feuds. Then you had the feud of the year. Then you had multiple title feuds. Then you got 5-star matches. Then you finally won North American Championship. Then you won the world. Like, he's done everything there is to do in that brand. So, like, we look at him. Let me flip it for you like this. His mentor is Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels to us is everything. Go ask a non-wrestling fan who Shawn Michaels is.
Yeah, I get that point totally, but Like, I think you've hit the nail on the head, though, with if nothing else to achieve in NXT. If he keeps winning more and more titles, it's just adding to his trophy cabinet, and he's not progressing as a wrestler in the whole of the wrestling universe. I think a move to main roster is inevitable for him.
Sure. Sure. Can he be the one to take away the title from Shayna Baszler?
I think it also, like, it goes towards a point that you made earlier in the show, that he's thought of that much that it's a detriment to the rest of NXT. And if he goes to main roster, it almost frees up a spot for someone else to come in and grow.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I named a few of them already. Lee, Keith Lee, Kushida.
Priest.
Dijakovic is, Damian Priest, Dijakovic is healthy again.
ACH.
Yeah, ACH, right. Shane Thorne, who got this feud with all eight of the guys in the, what you call it, the breakout tournament. The kid, mm-hmm. the Saudi kid who won, Mansoor, who won the Saudi Battle Royal.
Yeah.
He's talented. Like, you got a lot of guys down there that haven't been looked at or touched and can't get on TV because, you know, you have so many established guys ahead of them. So, you know, I mean, Bianca Belair, not only did she not have a match at TakeOver, she didn't have a match on the pre-show. She doesn't even have a feud right now.
Yeah, she hasn't been on NXT. She hadn't been on the TV for a couple of weeks.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so, but bro, I really want to see Johnny on 205 because I feel like that could be his way to really be a made man.
Yeah.
If Johnny could go to 205 and get some steam in 205, he'd be a made man. And it'd be in the same scenario that he had when he started NXT.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I didn't want to see him on the main roster. I get it, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny's said time and time again that he would, if he had the option, he would stay at NXT. He absolutely loves it down there. So that, to me, there's an easy, simple explanation and way that this can be solved. Move 205 to Full Sail. Johnny gets to stay with the same like crew. He gets to stay with the same fan base. And he gets a fresher opponent on 205 Live. And then you can have that transition between both brands. When someone's get a bit stale on NXT, they can move over to 205 and same on 205. When for instance, Drew Gulak gets stale, it can show up on NXT show for a few weeks. And it just keeps both brands like feeding each other and keeps them fresh.
But they need new stars, bro, because if I see Akira Tozawa and Kalisto in another championship opportunity match,
yeah,
or a contendership match, I'm going to lose my mind.
I think that's why everyone, or a lot of wrestling Twitter, are quite excited about Orny Logan getting a shot at Drew Gulak, because it is somebody fresh, and it is somebody who hasn't really been in the 205 scene for that long.
And he's genuinely crazy.
Yeah, his Twitter game is unreal. Absolutely, bro, unreal.
Did you see the video? He said he was going to sleep under a bench until TakeOver Toronto or SummerSlam. And he has the video of him climbing underneath the bench. he's crazy.
Yeah, he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, man. I was talking to Kyle the other day, and we were talking about how crazy he was. And he was like, well, Rance, his name on the Indies was Biff. That should tell you something. That's a good point. I can't dispute that point. I can't dispute that point at all. So, okay. So, I think the next TakeOver is TakeOver Survivor Series. Whatever Survivor Series is this year. Is it Philly or whatever it is. What's next?
I don't know. I don't see... Like I said earlier, I think this is a holding pattern, and I don't see where the next feuds are. There was no real feuds built up in after this show.
Not really.
It just seems like they're going to be meandering along, unless this week's NXT show brings up some new feuds and challenges. I don't know. I think we're going to see more of the same until we get a show on FS1.
Well, so the beauty of the way they tape is they'll have probably three tapings between now and then. Because what, beginning of August and the week after or the week before Thanksgiving, so that's at least 3 months.
Yeah.
So we'll have about 3 weeks of tapings. So anything can change at any time. But I think we can be guaranteed that we're going to see, between now and then, Candice and Eeyore are going to have another
return.
Match.
Yeah.
Riddle and Dane are probably going to have some type of brawl-esque match, no holds barred, no DQ, something.
Yeah.
Other than that, bro, yeah, it's a good question. Who's next for Adam Cole? Is Adam Cole going to be mad at his group for losing their matches? Is the Undisputed Era going to be broken up by the end of the year? Who's next for Shayna?
Who's next for the Street Profits?
Who's next for the Street? 100%.
Who's next for Dream? Who's next for Dream?
Right? What other tag teams are on the brand? Forgotten Sons of Breezango, sure. But, like, who else Street Profits got to wrestle that's established on the brand?
Mm-hmm. It can only be the Forgotten Sons for me.
Well, this feud should have been the Forgotten Sons because they never got their match.
Yeah.
After TakeOver 25.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you pay attention to, like, the Largo Loop or, like, I don't know if you pay attention to Twitter, but Robbie E., a.k.a. Rob Stone now, he got the formerly known as Dan Mather, now Dorian Mack, and Riddick Moss. They got this tag team called the Outliers.
Okay.
And essentially, they're like just big bodybuilding dudes who make a lot of money. Kind of an offshoot of what Riddick and Tina were doing, but not from like a former sports style, but from a we're better than you. Because it's almost like, well, anyway, you'd have to see it. But they look good together as a team. I don't know how good Dan Mather is in the ring, but I know Riddick Moss can go. That's something else that might be possible. Right?
Maybe. Yep. Yep. But the groundwork needs to be laid for that. And so far, there's been no groundwork for, apart from Dane and Riddle, which is the obvious one, but there's not been a lot of groundwork for future feuds. Like I said, it's just, it gives off that vibe of we're waiting on October to have a big event to kick off NXT going to FS1. I mean, that's if the rumours are even true. I mean, everybody's very keeping shtum about it, but there's no smoke without fire in this situation, especially with AEW on the horizon.
Yeah.
And then you factor in the rumours of WWE buying Fight.tv. Now, again, that's, they've come out and they've denied it, which they're probably obligated to do until the deal is finished. Mm-hmm. But that, to me, feels like it's going to be a trade-off that we lose NXT off the network because it's going to FS1, and then we traded with WWE bringing in these smaller promotions and having like an almost like a UFC Fight Pass kind of system where they have littler promotions who will essentially feed the WWE in like a tiered system. So you might get, for the $15 tier, you might get all these promotions plus like everything you get on the WWE network. Now, that, I think that kind of thing is what WWE are looking at. Plus, it's a little stab in the back for AEW. So win-win.
And absolutely. And you mentioned that. Give a big shout out to Evolve and Austin Theory, who got the big entrance, if you will, sitting ringside. So Evolve absolutely is probably going to take over that main NXT. And NXT UK, of course, no disrespect to them because they've been killing it. They're excellent. They have great, like, I love their shows. I can't wait for TakeOver Cardiff. But you need something more stateside for the stateside people.
Mm-hmm.
And, Evolve with what they got as a feeder system can be interesting. Austin Theory almost certainly is going to get signed full-time by WWE in the next year.
Yeah. I don't even think it'll be that long. I think you've seen him in the crowd now. I think it's a couple of months, maybe 6 months, and he'll be fully entrenched in NXT.
Well, he's going to drop the belts to Josh Briggs. Spoiler alert, he's going to drop the belts to Josh Briggs.
Yeah.
That he just very clear. If you watch the Evolve's 10th anniversary celebration, then you can tell that that's the next champ.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then he'll be next. I know who, we can end the show with this. I know who can fight the Street Profits for the tag champs. Mags and Cash, a.k.a. a.k.a. the Blethering Idiots.
We would win by just talking them into submission. We'll put them to sleep with our banal wrestling knowledge, and we'll just do a 24/7 style pin where we'll just sneak a ref in and win those tag titles.
I'm game. If you're game, I'm game.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Anything else you want to talk about before we get out of here, brother?
No, I think we've covered the majority of the show. I think there's just a bit too much negativity about the show because of what might be happening in the future. I think if you look at this show on its own, in its own little bubble, I think it was a really, really good show. It wasn't the best ever takeover, but it was certainly a very decent takeover. I think sometimes maybe when you're hitting those markers and you're doing so well and you're overperforming event after event after event, you're going to eventually have a takeover that's not up to that quality. And if you look at this takeover and compare it to other shows not out of the WWE, it knocks them out of the park. Absolutely knocks them out of the park. And it's just because it's compared to other takeovers, it's looked at as a little bit of a failure. And I think that's unfair to the event.
It's unfair to the event. It's unfair to the brand. It's unfair to the performers. It's okay to say that it didn't live up to expectations because we've upset that ourselves. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean it was a bad show. It was still a really, really good show. And if you can look at this show and find negativity because you want to, then that lets you know that you're the problem.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing if you don't like something to just say you don't like it, but to go out and find something out of your way to not like something because of a feeling you have or about something else that is secondary or tertiary to the show, you're the problem.
Yeah.
You're the problem. So, mm-hmm. You know, but I guess, man, that disappoints me so much that I didn't hear any of that. I didn't have the luxury of being on Twitter because I was watching from behind. So I didn't know what people were saying. And I expected for there to be a little disappointment, but like by and large, I thought people were still going to love the show. So that's really disappointing. So,
I mean, I don't know what the consensus was in open Twitter. That's the Discord I was in is quite a small like microcosm. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of almost inbred anti-WWE feeling about the show. And I think if you took that like bias away and looked at this show on its own merits, I thought it was a solid B show.
And you know what? This reminds me, I have some friends of mine and some people I used to work with that are so snobbish when it comes to wrestling now that a 3.5 they were like, oh, he's a 3.5 star wrestler. That's trash. I'm sorry, what now? So a match is only good if it's 5 stars now? Alright.
Yep.
That's the world we live in now, so.
We are spoiled. That's what it comes down to. We've had a good 2 years of outstanding wrestling, absolutely outstanding, where people have set and broke bars, and it's just been, we're getting to a point where a 5-star match 2 years ago is now a 3-star match.
But y'all out here clamoring for Cody matches though.
No, not all of us.
Not a diss on Cody, but Cody is not a 5-star wrestler.
No.
Hey man, tell the good people where they can find you, bro.
Well, you can, if after all that ranting you still want anything to do with me, you can find me on Twitter at DJ Kirkby, or you can check out some of my podcasts. I have one called Why We Watch, where I speak to content creators and fans about why they like wrestling. I've got a non-wrestling one called Five Rounds, where we look at UFC events, and then I've got Badlands, the comedy show of my trio podcast. I absolutely love doing that show. It's just so much fun. We talk about the Mount Rushmores of wrestling, and yeah, your boy Ray's been on that show. It's just an absolute blast. It brings back a little bit of fun to wrestling, and yeah, there's no better than it. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Did you see Homeboy get his nose broke yesterday?
Oh, it looked like a letter C. I was literally just talking with just before we came on here. I'm just finishing editing the review of the card last night. Whew, wow! It literally looked like a letter C. I said in the review, when they raised Luque's hand to say he'd won, Matt Perry could smell under his armpits his nose were pointing that way.
Oh my god! I saw the video. I didn't see the video. I saw the picture of it. And
yeah.
I was like, oh. Yeah, I would rethink fighting at that point. Like,
yeah, but if you actually watch the fight, it was quite an even fight. Even though he come off and looked like he'd been absolutely beat up with a sledgehammer, it was an even. He really gave his own. It's just that he took a lot of damage.
Well, but I yeah, that.
He's not smelling any roses in the next 6 months anyway.
Talk about medical suspensions. That's 6 months at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, of course, you can find me at Tetsuya Naito, aka it's Ray Cash, R-E-Y-S, Mr. Yo, C-A-S-H, as in dollars. The Tuesday show, Mags, I got my boy Andrew Blas from Chair Shot, and we're talking G1. So have a lot.
Yeah, this has been the best G1 I've ever watched in. I mean, I've not watched all the G1s. I think I've watched about three or four. Wow, it's been unreal, the amount of amazing matches day after day.
But whew, think how deep it is.
When
I haven't watched any of it, but I've been keeping up with the standings. When Goto is up for, like, you know, to win B Block, like, you know, Lance Archer, who has always been a really good wrestler. I think, what do you have, like 2 points?
I think he finished on 4, I think.
It's just so deep.
But
you know, it was just so deep this year.
The amount of talent who stepped up. I mean, Archer, yeah, he's done pretty poor in points, but in ring, he has been phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And then you've had like Moxley, who's gone over and has been an absolute revelation. Kenta started a little bit rough, but he really picked up. And Shingo Takagi, that guy is a beast, an absolute beast. If you watch any of that G1, watch his matches, because him versus Ishii is a banger.
That, by the way, that's your Wrestle Kingdom match, Naito versus Shingo. I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm. For leadership of LRJ.
Yep. It's because Sonata and Evil don't want it. They could have been had it. Because Naito's been lost everything the past 2 years. So.
And then there's the rumors of Sonata going to WWE as well.
Are there rumors of that?
There are rumors of that. He's in Japan, they tend to work as freelance almost a lot of the time. And WWE have been sniffing around. The likelihood is he won't go. I think he's a New Japan laugher. I think he didn't like his time in TNA. But it's Sonata in WWE. That would be very interesting.
And he's so young. See, Shinsuke, a lot of Shinsuke's issues have to come with his age.
Yeah.
Well, Sonata's not that young, is it? Sonata's, what is he, 30?
I think he's just turned 30.
Well, that's young for wrestling. 40's young for wrestling. Mm-hmm. I just have this hope in my heart that one day I will get to see, under the Titan umbrella, Andrade Cien Almas, Rush, and Tetsuya Naito all get to team up together again. That's my goal. I want that so bad. So
that'd be good.
Yeah. Well, let's get out of here, man. I appreciate you getting on with me, bro.
Absolutely. Anytime, sir. Anytime.
We'll hook up again. I'm sure we got a collab soon we're going to do. We try to get a few every few months, so.
Yeah, I totally enjoy it. Anytime you need a guest, bring me on. I'll waffle some crap for a couple of hours. Not a problem. I'm good at it. I'm well-trained.
Like I said, we're the blubbering idiots, so mags and cash. I'd appreciate it. All right, we will talk to y'all later. See you tomorrow.